From the front lines of the Lone Star State, you're listening to the Eyes of Texas, or a podcast. Powered by InsideTexas.com. Bringing you the insider knowledge on the players, coaches, recruits, and game plans of the Texas Longhorns. We dance with the one who brung you, and we don't quit till Gabriel blows his horn. Welcome to the 40 Acres.
This should be played at high volume, preferably in a residential area.
Welcome to the Eyes of Texas, our podcast, brought to you by InsideTexas.com, your one-stop shopping for all things Longhorns football. I'm your host, Eric Nolene, on site at Pinkerton's Barbecue. Lamar High School has been very kind to the UT universe, Brian Arakpo, my boy Drew Kelson, three current UT football players, and of course, Grant Pinkerton. What's up, Grant?
What's going on? Hook 'em.
Grant, of course, is well known for his Pinkerton's Barbecue. Not only is it fantastic food, but I think he's also, he's endeared himself to the UT faithful. Also, not just the UT fans, but the whole Houston community. I wanted to have Grant on. Grant is a friend of mine. Grant is also a giant Longhorn fan. Actually friends with some guys on the other sites as well. So Grant has really endeared himself to the community. You know, obviously we've had a couple of happy hours here. We'll have one here in another hour or so. But I wanted to have Grant on and have Grant talk a little bit about his story, his fandom, and also, of course, we're going to talk about the current UT team. So what's going on, Grant?
Not too much. Just enjoying having you guys out here today and getting to see all the guys.
Yeah, so Grant, of course, the UT fan. Everybody has a story to their journey, where how they became a UT fan. You also attended the university. Talk about how you became a fan and you know, how you feel about it now. You actually you're on the sidelines now since you're basically a celebrity.
Yeah, barbecue celebrity on the down low. You know, in my household when we grew up, there was only one team we rooted for. We weren't a pro football family. We were a college football family, and that college football team was the Texas Longhorns. I grew up watching the games with my dad and my mom. The whole family would sit around on Saturdays and watch it all. Like I said, you know, I only kind of realized about the Oilers in retrospect. We were Longhorns, and that's who you rooted for. My cousins were Longhorns, my aunts, my uncles. My grandfather went there. So kind of a long tradition. When I was a senior in high school too, I got a pretty nice scholarship from LSU to go to LSU and be part of their honors program. And I went and I visited Baton Rouge and I came back and I had a really great time. And I told my dad, man, you know, I'm a big duck hunter. I said, I could really see myself going to LSU. And my dad said, well, you got this letter from UT, so you might want to open it. So I opened it up and I had been accepted to UT, and he's like, why don't you go to Roundup this weekend? So I was like, all right, went up to Roundup, and then came back. I said, all right, that settles it. I'm going to Texas. So that was a short-lived soiree for LSU and me, but it was mostly the duck hunting that was going to get me there.
So you could be having this restaurant in Lake Charles or Baton Rouge and frying up alligator instead of doing a barbecue.
We can still do that.
We'll get to your cooking, and yeah, following Grant around on Instagram around lunchtime is going to be dangerous for your waistline. As I said, you went to Lamar. What year did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 07.
All right, so by the time you're in high school, Andrew Kelson is doing well at your sophomore or freshman in high school when he's winning a national championship. Was that a source of pride throughout the high school that you had that, you guys had that Lamar connection?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So when I was a freshman, he was a senior, him and Brian, and then, you know, we had guys like Brandon LaFell on that team as well. I mean, Quincy Driver, which you know, there was a lot of talent on those teams. And I remember as a freshman coming in and watching guys like Kelsen and Ratko work out and being like, holy shit, that's next level. You know what I'm saying? As a little freshman from a private school, see those guys doing it was something different. And then they went to Texas, and obviously I was a Longhorn, so I was rooting for those guys, and they get in the national championship, and the rest is history. Obviously for that program under Nolan and those guys, they were pretty happy that, you know, to be able to see guys like that excel on such a large stage.
So you actually get to UT at the end of an era, pretty much. It was the end of the high point for Mac. You graduated college in 2010, 2011?
No, I was a six-year kind of guy. So I got the best years of Colt, and then I got the worst years of Mac. Before Charlie Strong.
Was it the football, the bad football that forced you to graduate?
Yeah, so I got to get out of here. It certainly didn't make you want to stay for another fall semester, that's for sure.
What'd you major in?
Partying, and I made an A+ in that. And then in college, I had about what the team has for a GPA. I think that was about, you know, my average 2.89 or something.
And you were partying a lot more than them, so it's actually more impressive that you had the higher the GPA.
Much more.
All right, so you graduate college, but by this time you actually have some backyard skills on the barbecue. Apparently, how'd you get started in barbecue? It sounds like we need to regress a little bit to your childhood again to discuss the barbecue when you got started in that.
So it's one of those things where when I was a little kid, you know, everybody goes out and watches their dad grill and this, that, and the other. And, I was really fascinated with fire and meat and cooking. And I mean, even from a really young age, even before I got into like live fire cooking and meat, I was just so interested in flavors and combining flavors and, thinking about what would work with this. And I made some really terrible stuff when I was, you know, first, second, third grade, but I also, started understanding like my palate and what people's palate likes and how you can combine different things and the kind of fusion. And, you know, kind of looking back at it, it was something that probably should have been foreshadowing that, hey, this is something that not a skill not everybody possesses. And once I got into the live fire stuff, grilling was fun, but it only lasted like, you know, 20 minutes, you know, to cook a steak. And so I asked my dad, I said, well, I want a barbecue pit because if I start smoking a brisket, I can hang out here and burn shit for 12 hours.
Yeah.
So
the fun in the brisket is the whole setting of it. You know, you're going to have a couple beers. You're going to maybe even have some friends over that never have a bite of it. They just stop in and hang out a little bit. It's festive to do a long cook.
It's the process. And for me, even to this day, I enjoy cooking barbecue a lot more than I enjoy eating it. I mean, I'm sure a lot of you at-home cooks experience the same thing. You get through a 12-hour smoke, and you're like, I want some pizza. The last thing I want to eat right now is actually the barbecue I just spent half my day cooking. So for me, I'm blessed because I do love the act of cooking it, and cooking it a lot of different ways. And that's another thing that you'll probably notice if you follow me on social media or anything. I always have some new pit, new grill, new contraption that I'm cooking on. But it just interests me how the science behind it and that whole stuff. So when I was around 12 is when I really started cooking barbecue, and I just did it as a hobby. My dad would take me to the butcher shop here in Houston, and I'd pick out different cuts of meat, and I'd come back home and play around and burn wood. And I just kind of put it in the back of my head as, you know, it's just something I enjoyed doing. Got to college, obviously, I didn't take a very much of a course load. I took a lighter course load, so I had a lot of free time. Hung out at people's ranches and spent a lot of time away from Austin out in the hill country, just hanging out and cooking barbecue for fun. And kind of watching that explosion happen in Austin for the barbecue scene. So when I got there, you had like John Mueller, and he was doing his trailer deal, and Franklin wasn't even established. 2 years in, Franklin emerges. I mean, when I was a freshman in 07, barbecue in Austin was not
right.
It was not like any sort of epicenter of barbecue.
It was still a Central Texas absent Austin thing.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't in Austin. You go to Louis Mueller and Taylor, you go down to Lockhart, but actually in Austin, like most people ended up going to Rudy's or one of that crappy barbecue place that used to be on the drag. So fast forward to like 09, there's a guy cooking in a trailer that's supposed to be making some really good barbecue. His name was Aaron Franklin, and then the rest of the stuff kind of popped up there. By the time I left in 13, Barbecue is booming. You have lines out the doors, and you have the craft barbecue revolution going on. So I moved back, graduated, moved back to Houston, was doing something completely unrelated to barbecue, but I kind of asked some of my buddies, hey, there's been a craft barbecue boom in Austin. What are the places here we can go eat? And they're like, oh, you know, here, there. So we...
Damaris.
Yeah, you know, we went and we ate a couple places and...
There's not much in Houston either.
There wasn't too much at the time. And so there, we would go back to Austin and like grab a bite or something. But honestly, what I told them, I said, dude, let's just cook some barbecue next weekend in my backyard. And we can do craft style barbecue out of my parents' backyard. I did not have my own house at this point. And I still don't. I live at the restaurant. So I started getting that going, and the food I was putting out was actually pretty decent. And I started giving it away to buddies and at work and all this stuff, and more people started wanting it. And then people started being like, hey, well, if I can get some of your leftovers this week, I'll give you $100.
Damn.
It's like, okay. So, you know, I started making more money giving away my leftovers and cooking for a few people every week than I was at my job. And my boss actually sat me down and told me, hey, what you need to do is you have a passion for this. You have a gift, Grant, that you can make some great barbecue. You need to make a run at this. You're 24, you're young,
yeah,
and you live at your parents' house and you have no bills. Like, this is the time. So, you know, what do I have to lose? So I took all the money that I made and I bought a little tiny barbecue trailer that was built by the Liberty County Agriculture class in 92 and started pulling that around and hosting Pinkerton's barbecue pop-ups and doing catering. Got my social media rolling, and I kind of did that for 2.5 years before we opened the restaurant over here. And the whole thing just had been kind of snowballing the whole time. And we opened up here in December of 2016. And I guess we announced our second location is going to be in San Antonio. And we announced that January of 2019. So it's been a pretty cool ride so far.
Yeah, our paths, we crossed paths on Twitter. And, you know, I saw that you were doing barbecue, you know, and then I found out that you're a Texas fan. I'm like, this is my type of guy. So I followed you up, and I think, you know, we traded messages just saying what's up. And you're like, hey, I'm opening up a restaurant soon. I'm like, oh, man, that's cool. It's ambitious, you know, going from a trailer to a brick and mortar. And I came down here, and I'm like, what the hell is going on? This is a little bit more than I bargained for to go from a trailer to a brick and mortar. But, you know, first bite, and I was sold, too. So it's pretty apparent that you have a gift. And when you said you're mixing flavors at you know, the second, third grade, seeing what works together, I think that comes through in your sides as much as it does in your actual barbecue. You know, not to do a full-on commercial here, but, you know.
One interesting part about that portion of this business, it's very interesting right now. We're kind of at a pivot point in barbecue where you're starting to see so much fusion barbecue.
Right.
And call me old school or whatever, but I'm kind of the belief that when I wake up in the morning and I'm craving barbecue, I'm craving traditional.
Yeah.
And so my kind of mission was to take the common traditional barbecue and do it really well. We don't have gimmicks here. And it's not that fusion barbecue is gimmicky, but I'll wake up in the morning, I'm like, oh, I really could go eat some Korean style barbecue or, you know, some, you know, this more chefy barbecue, if you will. I almost feel like they're kind of diverging. It's kind of like Loro in Austin. It's almost like diverging barbecue pathways. People are getting weirder and weirder and weirder. Yeah. But people will always crave regular.
Yeah,
right?
for sure. Traditional. To me, I've had a bunch of the different styles, and you know, even putting coffee grounds on it, I'm like, what's going on here, man? This poor cow died for this. So you're brick and mortar, and that's when things really took off. A couple of things happened. You know, I think the big one was getting on the top 50.
Texas monthly list.
Yeah, the Texas monthly top 50. And, you know, I wasn't really surprised other than it just happened so fast. I wasn't surprised by the taste because I had had it. I'd said that you were tied with my other favorite brisket in town. And you agreed and said it was even a pretty similar. You said you used the same beef and all that. And then I came back the next time a week after you'd won the top 50 and it was a little different.
Yeah.
The place was booming.
Yeah, crazy packed.
So after top 50, another wild thing happened. This was even more wild to me, was making Forbes 30 under 30.
Yeah.
How'd that come about? That was a lot more rigorous than I anticipated. I thought that they just got word of mouth and said, hey, this guy's going to be good, and they put you on there. It's a lot more rigorous than that.
Yeah. So in that process, I'm in the dining room a lot here. And happened to be walking through the dining room one afternoon, and there's a gentleman in there with his wife and a couple kids. And, you know, it's just table touching. And I asked him, I said, hey, you know, if you guys want to see the pit room after y'all are done eating, I hope you enjoy everything. Come back and I'll show you the pit room. So it was raining out that day. And sure enough, the guy comes around the back with his two kids and his wife. And he strikes up a conversation with me. And, you know, it's a fairly long conversation. It's probably 20-minute conversation between him and I. And, you know, most people kind of have a standard set of questions they ask when they're looking at the pits and barbecue stuff. And he was kind of asking me some questions that were a little more pointed, a little more...
insightful?
Yeah, you know, this is somebody that, you know, I just getting the feeling like this is somebody who's asked some questions before, and they're not just your average barbecue fan. There's something... He's a smart guy.
He's got a motive here.
Yeah. He's smart. And so we get through the conversation, and he's asking about the business and how I got started and where I am now and what makes us different and all this kind of stuff. And so then we get to the end of the conversation. He's like, well, I'd really love to talk to you some more. Here's my business card. Email me so we can set up a time to talk. And I looked at the card, and it was his tag was
Steve Forbes.
Yeah, senior editor of Forbes magazine. And I was like, oh, like, shit, all right.
Yeah, you went and cleaned up your suit real quick?
Yeah, exactly. So I went up and I told my fiance, I was like, I'm pretty sure, this guy from Forbes wants to talk with me. So I emailed him, and we kind of started going back and forth and talking about stuff. And he came over here and conducted a couple interviews. And he explained to me what the 30 under 30. First it was like, oh, we're doing this, like, article. And then after an interview or so, a couple interviews, then it came out, it's like, we're doing the 30 under 30, and I really think that you have a good shot of potentially making it. Obviously, I'm not the one who picks these things, but I would really like to run you up the ladder for the people in New York City. And so I was like, oh, great. So he came in, filmed a video, and then you pass a preliminary process where, like, they're going to even allow you to be judged by the panel. And then they sent out a questionnaire, like, took a couple hours to answer. It's more about business growth, you know, capital raise, what were your gains in the different quartiles, you know, marketing strategies, who are you targeting, stuff that really got into the nitty-gritty of business. What are your goals for the future? And that was something I talked about him in the interview. What's Pinkerton's Barbecue gonna do? Are you gonna grow it? You know, he could tell, obviously, I was a business guy kind of from the beginning, and you know, his motive was, you know, are you the kind of guy you just want to stay here, and are you going to be content selling X amount of briskets a day, and, you know, you ride that into the sunset, or do you want to start a barbecue empire, you know? And, you know, I talked to him about that, and, you know, I said, you know, I'm a person that, you know, like, I'm not a risk taker per se, but I'm not scared of anything. So if the right opportunity presents itself, yeah, I would love to grow my business, and I would love for somebody that's sitting in New York City to know exactly who I am. And so filled out the questionnaire, and they came back, and they were really kind of impressed, and they put me on the list as the first. I was the first barbecue pitmaster / barbecue restaurant owner to ever make the list. So that was neat, and for me, it was like real validation for my business acumen.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot of people out there that can cook barbecue really well. Hell, some people can cook it better than me, I'm sure. But, you know, to blend those two things together and be recognized for that was really nice for me to know that, hey, maybe I'm onto something here.
Yep. Your third one that I wanted to talk about is recently you were in Memphis, and I haven't talked to you about this one since it happened, but I know you were excited about it, just paying attention to social media, was you won Best Beef in Memphis.
Yeah.
Talk about how that came about, and also, what do you think about the other styles of barbecue between Texas, Memphis, Kansas City, South Carolina? Which ones stand out to you that you like? I think we're on the same page. We're not the biggest fans of hog, but
right.
It's got to be done right.
If it's done right, it's great. For me, I was really honored to be able to go to Memphis because it's not a very easy cook-off to get into. And I actually did a pop-up in New York City at a barbecue restaurant in Brooklyn, and those guys have a Memphis in May team, and they asked me to come out and essentially be a beef ringer for him. So this is my first year to go to Memphis to cook a beef turn-in. And I compete on the circuit here when I get a chance. You know, we've done really well at the Houston World Championship. But Memphis is kind of another animal. So the cool part about Memphis is when you're there and you're walking by all these tents, you're like, oh, man, I have that guy's sauce. I've read that guy's cookbook. That guy's the national pitmaster for Kingsford. That guy's the national pitmaster for Academy. I use that guy's seasoning on the food I'm turning in today. You know, I mean, it is the murderer's row of barbecue pitmasters and the who's who. And just being at like one of the bars after the cook-off is over, I mean, you have Myron Mixon and Tuffy Stone. I mean, dude, it is like the Mount Rushmore of barbecue pitmasters.
It sounds like
there.
It could be a Christopher Guest movie, like Best in Show. You know, it's such a niche thing, this barbecue thing. You can make a good movie about a dog show with an ensemble cast, especially with those names. You wouldn't have to change a thing.
You know, it's pretty wild. So we went up there, and the guys told me there was only going to be 70 turn-ins for the beef category. And so I was feeling really confident.
How
heading
many?
70.
Only?
Yeah, I was feeling very confident about it. I mean, you know, we've done some other ones that are much bigger than that. I mean, the rodeo is 250, and we kicked ass at the rodeo this year. And I'm really confident in my beef turn-in. I used some locally grown Wagyu beef at RC Ranch.
Well, what'd you do differently? So you said you're not into when they get all super creative with it or overly creative. And here at the restaurant, you keep it simple. But I think for your competition,
you got to go a little different. It's all about layering flavor. So for me, that's my outlet to get really weird. You know, that's my outlet to start building flavor profiles, sauces, all that kind of stuff, which I love to do.
Right.
And if I serve it in the restaurant, people sometimes, you know, I'm not going to serve that here because you don't want to eat a whole tray of that stuff. But it's really fun to try to.
Well, then you're going to have to reproduce it.
Yeah, it blows people's socks off in one bite. So I cooked my first test on Monday that before Memphis in May, and I took it upstairs, and my fiance and I tried it. And it was definitely a holy shit moment when we ate it. And that's usually what you want with competition barbecue, is everything you want. It was super beefy. It was really rich, sweet, savory, spicy. And the thing about there is you can turn in anything that's beef. So some people are turning in prime beef tenderloins. Some people are turning in brisket. Some people are turning on beef ribs. So it's actually a little more fun, and there's kind of a little more, you know.
And you won with hamburger.
I did, just a slider patty, and that's amazing.
What was your beef, obviously?
We did beef rib burn-ins. And so we went up there, flew in, brought the beef from Texas, cooked it up there, did it, and it was funny because when I woke up that morning, I told my fiance, I said, well, are you ready to go win beef? She's like, Grant, please stop. Don't do that to yourself. Like, you're going to get your hopes up. I said, we're going to win. I've been saying we're going to win for 3 days. I said, I know we're going to win. So I leave. I tweet out the thing of the Sam Ellinger running out of at the Georgia game, running out of the locker room, you know, jumping all up in the air with the fire. And I was like, this is how I feel today. This is my mood before beef turn-in. We're going to do this.
This is going to go in the Christopher Guest movie, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, we get there. I start keeping everything up. I cook it. I get everything done. I turn it in. And I turned around and was like, dude, that's a winning box. I said, I feel really good about what we put in that box. It looked great, tasted amazing, it was super rich. And so then after that, you like sit around and wait for 4.5 hours, 5 hours. And I'm like trying to drag everybody to the stage. And these guys had never won in that category before. And so like, oh, let's just have a few more drinks. I said, hey, if y'all don't go to the stage right now, I said, my fiance and I are going to walk over there. And we'll watch the awards. They're like, oh, well, they always start off with the sauce awards first. Don't worry about it. So I've been pounding Diet Cokes all day. So we walk to the stage. I get to the stage, and I turn to my fiance, Sarah. I'm like, I got to go to the bathroom really bad. So I run all the way back to the tent thinking that they're going to announce sauce first. I go to the bathroom. I run back to the stage, and I'm trying to push my way through the crowd to get back to where our team is. And I hear them start to announce beef category. And I'm like, oh, shit. So I weasel my way up there. They call fourth place, and I figured maybe we would get third, second, something like that. Never, you know, I don't know. Like, you have to get a little bit lucky to get first place too. So no fourth place called. I was like, okay, that's all right. We got third and second left. I said, we're good. And so no third place call. And then I could tell everybody on the team was getting a little nervous. Of course, they didn't think we were going to win. Sarah's getting nervous.
You have to endure these moments to win, but at the same time, you're a little nervous that you hadn't been called yet. What,
right.
You don't like my food?
Right, exactly.
Jax, I flew all the way here for this?
Yeah, and Sarah gets real nervous about that because she sees all the work I put in or whatever. And I'm like, and I lean over, I'm like, we're going to win. Don't worry.
You don't want to be called third.
Second place goes off. No call on second place. I said, that's it. We won this. And she like is crossing her fingers and freaking out. And they call it and we won. And all the guys on the team like freak out and I'm freaking out. And part of it is too, like, go to Tennessee, go to Memphis, compete with all these old school, old South cookers.
Yeah.
And make sure we take the freaking beef trophy back home to where it needs to go.
How hard of it is it to adapt for somebody cooking on the road? It's a road game, you know? So it's like,
I adjust all my flavor profiles to go to people because they take people off the street in Memphis and that's who's judging. So an hour goes by and they post, like, unlike here, they actually post your scorecards like at the end, like you would at the end of the semester, outside on a big board so everybody can see how well or how bad you did. And so I was like dying to go see that. We ran up to that board as soon as they posted it and we made it. We had scored a perfect score. But I looked at how many turn-ins there were, teams that were turned in. There were like, I don't know, like 150 or more turn-ins for the beef category, which thank God I didn't know it at the time. But that's a lot more than 70. Like,
right.
You know, that's double the amount of turns. I probably wouldn't have been quite so confident.
Yeah.
You know, 1 in 70, I only need to beat 1 in 18 teams to get a call, right? 1 in 150,
yeah.
I need to beat a hell of a lot more. That was Memphis in May, and that was a big, big, big deal. Of course, the next day they do whole hog, shoulder, and rib competition, and our team does whole hog, and I watched that process, and that was pretty neat. Like kind of like you, when pork is done really well, it's great. But one of the things I learned there was like, oh, this is phenomenal. It tastes so porky.
Right.
I was like, well, it's the same flavor I get when cook a pork tenderloin in the oven. You know, it's like, that's what we're going for here.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like it's that hard to achieve, but the guys who are doing shoulders, I don't know, it's a whole different ballgame and I appreciate it a lot. But when I was in Memphis, we went to Central Barbecue and you know what? As weird as it is, I like sauce on barbecue if it's good sauce. And they had some good slaw, and their sandwich was slaw and barbecue sauce. That's a good bite of barbecue.
Yep.
It's not Texas barbecue, but it was a good bite of barbecue. So that was really neat. And trophies here in the restaurant. And I can't wait to go back. We got a few others we need to knock down. I really would like to get into the Austin Rodeo and cook there next year. I missed my invitation last year. I think I looked at it like a week late to send my stuff in. So hopefully I'm out there and I have a team and we can have everybody come by and hang out and party with us.
So it seems like the stars kind of align for you at times. And Texas got an offensive line coach that is a certified foodie.
Yeah.
And
Ian, great guy.
Yeah, and great guy. He's a fantastic guy. One day I need to write everything that I have compiled on people's interactions with him because that guy goes way above and beyond. It's beyond the normal human, much less somebody under such time constraints that Herb Hand is.
He's one of the first people to congratulate me about Memphis.
Yeah, dude, he's just a beast, man. I love that guy. I don't even know him, but so he becomes the Texas offensive line coach, and you already have a name within football circles. I know. I think there might be a couple high school coaches up here in a little bit. So you're well known. Twitter helps a lot. Of course, your UT fandom helps a lot, but. Talk about the coaches that come in here. You know, I know when they're on the recruiting stops, they seem to take a liking to the place.
Oh yeah, I think you know, the first person that stopped in here was Brooke Whitaker, who's works for the athletic department, takes care of DKR and they're not trainers, the equipment staff.
Yeah.
Matt Rutherford and those dudes, they came in here during the Texas Bowl. And I just tweeted at them because they were hosting practices here, and I knew they were done with the practice. I said, hey, y'all come over here. Let me feed you guys, and y'all can go back to practice. So they said they got out of practice, and they were looking at their phone, and they were, hey, well, let's try this spot. And so they came over here, and, man, they were great dudes, and they liked the food, and they took word to the troops back that, hey, there's this guy who's a great, big Longhorns fan who's got an awesome barbecue place. Y'all need to check it out. So then they were – at some camps here, I guess. It was a U of H camp, maybe?
TSU camp.
TSU camp. And they all the coaches came in after one of those camps. And Meekins and Hand had been in before that. And, you know, it's just a great opportunity to get around those guys and talk to them and kind of find out who they are. And, you know, they're a bunch of great dudes. And it's been a real pleasure getting to meet them and get to know them, both, you know, from a football standpoint and from a personal standpoint. You know, me and Tess ties to the Houston football scene. So
yeah.
We can always talk about, you know, I went to Lamar, so I kind of keep my ear on the recruiting trail too. So we got stuff we can talk about. But the awesome part about having Coach Handen here is that, you know, we can talk about food and all that sorts of stuff. It's not just football centric conversation, which honestly, with a lot of the other guys, it's not either. They're just solid dudes.
Are they kind of surprised that you know as much about UT football as you do, or is you're as fluent in the conversations?
I think at first maybe. But you know, you gotta like ease into that.
Yeah.
You don't want
it like you're pounding them for information and stuff.
No, yeah. That and the other two thing is like you don't want to come off as some recruiting freak, you know.
Yeah, you don't. They're asking you about barbecue while you're asking them about football.
Right. You know, so it's careful balance.
Anything.
But I think the thing that, you know, what they can have an educated college football conversation, or we can talk about kids shit. We can talk about kids that aren't even coming to Texas.
Yeah.
You know, and those are probably some of our best conversations are about the high school football landscape and those kind of things. And honestly, talk about, you know, some, you know, the team and, you know, their personal lives as well. So
how do you think the team's gonna shake out this year?
You know, I go to Austin quite a bit, and I think the one thing that I hear a lot when I'm there is I hear a lot of people telling me that they feel like Texas overachieved last year, and quite frankly, I think that's a load of bullshit. If you kind of go down, I watched all the games. Hell, I almost went to all the games. If you're looking at that, the way the season went, the games we lost could have easily been W's.
You could make the easy argument that this was the year they were supposed to have, because the year before wasn't the year they were supposed to have.
Correct. 100%. And so I don't think they overachieved last year at all. I think that was kind of, you know, you're going to take your losses at some point. And, you know.
Well, you know, they still had a couple bad losses like they had the year before. It was a regression to the mean in the, you know, the win totals. They still had some of the characteristics of the year before, but they had the positive characteristics that were kind of lost in the season of, you know, having losses. They were mentally tough, physically tough. And they were just more cohesive, and they had quarterback play. And healthy offensive line. You know, one thing I was writing in the 2017 season was that they were lacking health across the line. And, you know, that's, you can't even coordinate an offense when that's the case. So once those things got under control, obviously the offense looked a lot better by returning the same coaches on that side. Everybody thought Tim Beck had to go.
Except for you added Coach Hand.
Well, yeah, of course. Now that's a big one.
That's a huge improvement.
That's a real one, even along with the health. It's hard to quantify exactly how much, but we know it was a big bounce. You know, no offense to Wareheim. He was dealt a very bad – Wareheim was dealt extremely bad luck in his last two seasons coaching the offensive line. U of H was decimated, and then he gets to UT thinking he's going to have it a lot better, and they get decimated again. But Hand is just an upgrade in so many different ways. He's actually going to have a little more involvement in the offense. You know, you could see some of that with some of the run game that he brought from Auburn. But the season, it was frustrating to see it the last season get off to a rough start. It had me questioning everything about my information and all kinds of things. But you could see that they were different. You could see that they still had some of that fight in them. It just took a little bit longer for the offense to come around. And weirdly enough, as great a season, and what Grant was just saying before we went on was Ellinger was great in the midseason, in middle season, where it seemed like he could do no wrong. I think his first game was 19 for 39 at Maryland, and everybody focuses on that late interception. I don't really blame him for that one. He was extremely inaccurate, and then all of a sudden he just started throwing dimes. And like you said, he was making every throw, not turning the ball over, and then that season was off and running. Once you have good quarterback play, I don't think it's hard to foresee 10 wins in a 14-game season.
No, and I was sitting there. I remember very vividly. I was sitting in the stadium when we were playing Tulsa, and it was halftime at the Tulsa game, and there's somebody ranting to me about how it's actually there on the site, ranting to me about how terrible the Texas football team was.
Oh, Lord.
And
not our site.
Yeah.
It was our site.
You know,
yeah, we'll get to that later.
We're going to have, you know, 6 losses.
Oh, Lord,
know, blah, 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 blah.
We're not talented. There's no talent.
No.
You know, there's
coach
no...
like shit, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? My point I was trying to make to the guy was, hey, look, just in my kind of evaluation of the last two games, our offense is about 3 inches away from blasting the doors open.
Right.
And if you go back and you watch those games, and I...
You can see how close it was.
Yeah, Sarah, my fiance, and I were talking about this through the first half. It's like, God damn. You know, Sam throws it 3 inches to the left of that guy. Further out, yeah. And then he catches him in stride, and that guy takes for a touchdown.
The Trey Watson fumble against Maryland. Just
exactly.
Bad luck stuff.
I mean,
stuff,
just man. Everything happened about, you know, the ball thrown 3 inches behind the guy turns into an interception. Everything was about 3 or 4 inches wrong. And when it finally got together, it was just a timing issue. And that, and that we were both talking about, you know, if they can get the timing to click, and then we showed up to the USC game, and the timing clicks in that game. And you're like, aha, this is it. And I think you got – Sam and the guys got into a great rhythm through the middle of the season, and he sustained shoulder injury, knocks us out of the rhythm again.
Yeah.
So I think if you can get middle of the season unimpeded shoulder Sam going into this year, I really optimistic that the offense can roll.
Yeah, I'm optimistic for a number of reasons. Texas just being a year better is a big one. Another one is, you know, a lot of turnover within the conference. You've got a lot of teams installing new schemes. Still not a great quarterback conference like it has been in the past. But one concern I have, and I think you have it as well, is just how long are they going to find their identity on defense? What is Orlando's best scheme? Is it something he's going to discover after playing Iowa State, or is he actually going to figure it out in August? The sooner that happens, I think it's going to tell the story of the season, because there's a lot of faith in the offense. Even more so than last year, they still struggled to put up a ton of points at times, and there was times that they could have put games away that they didn't. And this year, I think it's going to be a little more with offense is going to put up more points than defense isn't going to be grinding out every game. But I'm still a little worried about how soon Orlando puts it all together.
Yeah, that's a huge concern for me. Just, you know, based on track record, I think one thing that you saw last year, you know, everybody worries about the, you know, fourth quarter meltdowns that we were having and, you know, not being able to close games. But if you kind of look at the depth of the roster, I remember reading a quote from Seattle coach Pete Carroll, and looking at their depth they had and the amount of times they subbed and changed and how fresh those Seattle teams were in the fourth quarter made them just shut people down in the second half of games. And I feel like you had the exact opposite of that at Texas, where you were really relying on your starters to carry you the entire game. In fourth quarter in the Big 12, your legs are gassed. You know, you saw that at the end of the Oklahoma game, you know, where Kyler Murray's running, you know, kind of free for a touchdown.
Yeah.
When the rest of the game, I mean, quite frankly, you know,
they got their asses
freaking
kicked.
Tired. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I think that problem is a little bit more alleviated this year. So I think that will artificially help boost those fourth quarter numbers up. But then schematically, are we gonna put Malcolm Roach out? At linebacker, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, what is going to be our Malcolm Roach at linebacker?
See, everybody,
this year?
Everybody falls into the proper position this year. Last year, there was concerns. I voiced them. I was, you know, a lot of people said it reminded me that I was not a football coach for saying it was ridiculous to have Malcolm Roach at linebacker. Not even just be backer. He should have been on the defensive line the whole time. I think McCullough is about to break out, and they should have been training McCullough here. You know, he should be having this offseason that he's having this year is a great one. Just got accepted into McCombs. Congrats to him. But that should have been happening last year. You know, you got to replace Malik. Hello, it's not going to be Gary. You know, Gary has his strengths, but he also doesn't have a full understanding of the position. So I think now the pieces more clearly dictate that he can run his dime again. That he used to success. You know, 2 years ago, last year I think he was trying to square peg it a little bit. But this year it makes a lot more sense to run dime, and I think it's going to, because of that, he's going to pick it up early. The one difference is, you know, he ran nickel versus Georgia, and everybody's like, see, he knows what he's doing. But Georgia is really easy for him. LSU is not going to be it might be a strain on the field in a physical sense, but it's not going to be a strain on the chalkboard. He's going to know exactly what to do and have those guys lined up in the right position. It's what he's going to do versus, you know, Oklahoma State, even though OU doesn't even set up as scary as it does in the past, because Jalen Hurts is going to be a lot more predictable. But yeah, it's. I think Texas. You know, I agree with some of my sources that, you know, college football playoffs are within sight. Not saying they're likely, But you know, if you name 10 teams that can make the playoffs and Texas is one of them, I think you're out of step there.
I think if you scratch the W against LSU, I wouldn't start talking about playoffs, but you're getting there. You could even, as much as I hate to say, you could lose OU in the Cotton Bowl and then turn around and win the Big 12 championship.
Yeah.
It's not out of realm possibilities.
Yeah, the guy that loves football in me is excited about that type of rematch, but it's also like, man, having to beat, you know, you saw OU, you know, they had to beat Texas twice, and you know, that's a heavy lift. They were able to pull it off, but it's not necessarily fair if you win in a round robin conference already. You already played everybody. Let's transition to recruiting. You follow recruiting. You follow recruiting as much as you follow the team, it seems like. What are some of the recruits that you're hoping Texas can land? Do you have your pets, your favorites?
I try to stay away from doing that because that's how you get your heart broken,
I guess.
Oh,
man, yeah.
You know, all the guys have meltdowns. You know, one of the things that I really like Jackson getting in the class this early because I feel like he's a person that can motivate and, you know, get other people to commit.
They needed him because it's, you know, the class has a little bit of a country club feel to it at this point. It almost looks like, 2012 Mac Brown class.
Let's get
an ass kicker in there. And, you know, I saw people saying, finally, we have somebody from DFW. I'm like, man, Jake Majors is from DFW,
right.
You know, but you gotta get some more vocal guys, even if they're not vocal on Twitter. You know, those DMs are actually where all the action happens anyway. So, you know, fans kind of focus too much on the overt stuff rather than the covert things. But they needed that guy in the class. He has the respect to everybody in Dallas Fort Worth. Well, after the North Shore game, he has the respect to everybody in Houston too.
Yeah, I would love to get Bijan in, and you know, I was telling some people in here a couple months ago. They were asking me about the Evans recruitment and all that kind of stuff. I said, you know, you can stay on him as long as he wants you to stay on him. But at some point, you know, if you give me a choice, I'm all for trying to hit the home run. But if you can get a guy like Jace and Robinson in the same class, it's a freaking no-brainer.
Yeah.
You know, no-brainer whatsoever, and that's net gain. With the kind of bust rate you have at the running back position, I mean, somebody laid it out just the other day on the site, going through Texas's RB, you know, pickups since like 2007, and you look at those,
yeah,
how many names swing in a big fat miss, you're much better off taking two.
Yeah.
They could both potentially be great.
I do feel bad for Malcolm Brown. You know, Malcolm Brown running behind last year's O-line, he probably would have looked kind of like the five-star he was initially ranked. But yeah, you know, Bijan, I think, is a really good culture fit for Texas if they can get him. Actually, it's my prediction that they will.
Seems like a great kid.
Yeah, he does. He definitely, I don't know him very well, but I do. He seems to have done my homework. It seems like he has sort of a Malik personality. To me, the number one thing that says is that he just kind of fits at Texas, you know, not just the football program, but the school, the university. And then with Jace wanting to make a late decision in January, if you already have Bijan in the class you're playing with house money, you just have to make sure you're recruiting other guys too, because there's plenty of talented guys that like Taj Brooks at Manor, and you know, there's plenty more that recruiting a kid out of Oklahoma that's really good too. But if you land Bijan, you know, it's like winning winning Memphis beef. You don't care what happens with the rest of the flavors, man.
Right.
Chad Lindbergh, I know that they've actually eaten here before, I believe.
Yeah, that was gonna be my other one. I really like him in the class. Probably taking a little bit longer on the visit front than I would have originally kind of suspected, and I think you guys had kind of mentioned, you know, timeline is a little off, but you know, the few times I've talked, he seems like a great kid, and you know, when I was 18, look at me, you know, I went to Baton Rouge and partied there and registered for classes,
yeah,
and came back the next weekend and signed up for UT. You know, I mean, it's just when you're 18 years old and or 17.
Chad, I think a lot of people, and I might have been guilty of it at a time or two, was assuming that he was a Texas kid when he's never really been fully bought in. You know, not obviously not bought out or anything. He's not down on Texas, but I'm going to be interested to see what he does with these official visits. He's been a little more secretive than he was previously. I wonder if he. I think maybe those OVs might unearth a dark horse. You know, at one point he was a package deal. with Damian George and Zach Evans, which I kind of found funny because I'm not sure how you're going to consider Stanford and be a package deal with Zach and Damian. No offense to those two, but you know, obviously I wasn't going to get in Stanford either. But you know, does he go to Alabama? Is that really in play? I know he likes Georgia, so we'll see. Obviously, offensive line is going to be in good hands. Really, the depth chart. I was at the Houston Lunch Bunch today talking about it. Man, there's a lot of tackles and there's a lot of guards. And obviously, I think both of us trust Herb Hand to get all those guys in the right place. So with the nucleus they have right now, Garth upside tackle, I think Jake Majors can be a fantastic center. Logan Parr is a guard or a center. You know, they're in a good spot to sit there and wait and see what Chad does. But if not, you know, they got a new offer out to Andre Karich out of South Lake Carroll. Great build, great frame, great upside. You've heard it on this podcast 100 times. Grow your tackles, and he's definitely one. You don't care that he weighs 250 right now. You just care what those shoulders are. Those shoulders like Rob Chirinos that just hit that home run. Notice how broad his shoulders are?
Yes.
See, that? What I always tell people is power is in the width, man. That's where you want width. You don't want narrow people. Sorry if you're narrow. Look at that guy. See what I mean?
Width. Exactly.
Any other recruits that you're interested in? We need a defensive guy for sure.
Well, I was just about to bring that up. You know, one of the things that I'm kind of wondering about and kind of sitting back and watching as linebacker recruiting for this current class, you know, there's certain names popping up. Obviously, with the Gabriel Floyd issue, it's, you know, kind of wait and see.
What a bad beat, man. Everybody is really bummed about that. Like, obviously, you have to get past it, but it's such a bad beat for him because he's such a fantastic kid who absolutely eats, breathes, and sleeps football. You know, imagine, you know, in the program when the guy hurts his knee or whatever and he thinks is it the program or whenever, feels his career is over, and it's like, you know, that it feels that kind of way. It felt that kind of way to him. Obviously there's a lot more optimism to it, but you just hope that guy can play football, whether it's at Texas or somewhere else.
Well, and you know, for me, looking at him as a player is one thing, but he is kind of the embodiment. He's like a cultural dynamo for the Texas team and what they want to do. Hard nose, hardworking, all about football. Eat, sleep, breathe football.
Yeah.
He was that guy in that class that really embodied that. And those kind of people are essential and crucial into growing and continuing that culture. That was a person who, in his third or fourth year, you know, is taking the freshmen and pushing them a lot harder than any coach is.
Exactly. There's going to be a leadership drop just from, you know, if he doesn't remain at Texas. Really, he's got a Reuben Foster type of athletic skill set. I'm not going to say he's Reuben Foster off the field at all. So when there's a little bit of a hole in linebacker, you know, you have to feel sorry for the staff. Obviously, they did a good job of throwing Juwan Mitchell in there very late, which, you know, we'll see what he can do. Looking at linebackers, you know, Josh White, they're still working on Josh. I talked to him the other day. You know, I expect him to be on campus. You know, he'll visit campus this summer. And then he'll take an official visit, so it's not over with. What games are you going to this year? I think you're going to West Virginia.
I'm going to be at the La Tech game. I'll be at the LSU game. We're going to do a party bus from Pinkerton's Reliant for the Rice game.
Oh, man.
Or party bus or two or three, depending on how many people we can get to sign up. I'll be at the Oklahoma State game.
That actually might motivate me to get a babysitter that night. I was, when they put that time out, I was thinking, oh, man. Because I was going to take my kid to that game, but obviously I'm not taking a kid to that, you know. Yeah, I'm going to have him looking at Rice. That's where he profiles more, too, is being a Rice kid.
Yeah.
Not really.
And, I you know, there are some of my buddies that you played for TCU. Honestly, I'm trying to make it every single game away and home.
Jeez.
You know, San Antonio opens next year.
You know, I was wanting to talk to you about that. You know, you got your restaurant on autopilot when you can do that. So let's talk about San Antonio. That was going to be what I wanted to finish with is, if you live in San Antonio, Grant has good news for you.
Yeah, we're going to be opening a, Pinkerton's Barbecue downtown next to the New Frost Tower, Houston and Maine.
So you kept it Houston a little bit.
Yeah, had to. Well, I'm on Maine here. You know, so I had to kind of keep some similar ties, but I'm really excited about the direction. Obviously, we're building from the ground up, so it probably won't be, it's not going to be ready for a while. Don't be lining up yet, but we're in the design phase at the moment, but I'm really happy with the direction it's going. It's definitely going to be a kind of place, you know, we do the cocktail menu and bar program here, and we're going to take that to a whole nother level at this one.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's perfect when you got the tourist area. Because, I mean, I go there every year for the Army All-American game. And, you know, there isn't really a great place downtown that I really like. I feel like I have to go there. But, you know, obviously I drive an hour to come down here. Obviously I'm going to walk a few steps to go over there. That full bar really does the damage you need.
We'll be in a one-acre park, so it'll be pretty. We'll have a bunch of seats and stuff outside. And really one of my goals is to make a destination bar out of the place along with the barbecue. And if we can kind of do it, take what we do here and grow it larger, it's going to be a two-story building. So it'll be a second-story patio space there, a covered patio, which is, you know, great for hanging out, drinking beers and that kind of deal. But there's not much in downtown San Antonio that, you know, if you're spending an evening down there or you're spending a weekend down there, there's not a ton of places to go and enjoy yourself. You know, from an entertainment standpoint, you know, the Riverwalk and this stuff, when you want to get out of that, you can walk a block and a half and come hang out and drink some cold beer and cold margaritas.
So this definitely answers that Forbes 30 under 30 question of, you know, what do you see yourself doing? How do you grow the business? So San Antonio's on. How big do you want to make it? I mean, you threw a little – no, you didn't actually throw any shade, but you just mentioned that Austin just had Rudy's. I love Rudy's for what it is. You know, when I have family in town and I need to pick up just a giant batch of barbecue – and it's actually had briskets shipped out to my wedding in California because it wasn't, you know, we weren't going to find any briskets. They're actually delicious because we smoked them to warm them up. But how do you see yourself being mass producing? Because I know you're always going to be concerned about the drop off of quality with each one. How do you see it? How do you see it playing? Are you just going to play it by ear?
Well, you know, this would be a great gauge for me what we can do at a second location. You know, but kind of at the end of the day, I always tell people this, you know, cooking barbecue is really simple. It's just not easy.
Right.
So I try to make the process as simple as possible to teach these guys how to do it. You know, Aaron Franklin isn't sitting in his pit room.
Right.
Shoveling over.
So it's as easy as it's easy to say if you have the right people to do it, you'll do it. Because, this is a great opportunity to come learn how to cook as long as you're dedicated and put in the time.
Right. And that's the thing.
You'll help them advance and. They might have their own store.
Right. You have to have the passion for doing something like this because it's kind of a lifestyle. You're going to eat, sleep, and breathe barbecue. It's a lot like playing football. But at the end of the day, there's something to be said about getting to show up to work in a dry fit and mesh shorts and making good money and kicking it with your homeboys all day and putting out awesome food that everybody likes. You know? It's not, you know, you don't have to work in an office. You don't have to wear a suit. You don't have to really answer to anybody but me. And I'm pretty easygoing. So, you know, for us, we'll see how San Antonio goes. And if it does well, I definitely wouldn't say that anything else is off the table.
What do you think are some underserved areas? Now, obviously not giving away where the next destination might be, of course. I don't mean that, but. So Houston is full up, or maybe not underserved. Let's talk about overserved. So it used to be when you first got here, there was no places in Houston. Now it seems like you can't go anywhere. You can even go down to Astros game and get some decent barbecue.
Right.
You know, talk about just the expansion of it. I know Dallas has had its boom. Fort Worth.
I know people in Fort Worth have been like holding out, but I'm telling you, Fort Worth is about to be freaking craft barbecue mecca.
Yeah,
it'd be awesome.
I've been to Heim. What are your thoughts on Heim?
I've never eaten there, but the guys who are coming in with Goldie's, Dylan Taylor, and those dudes are gonna put out, in my opinion, probably the best barbecue in the state.
Really?
Yep.
Wow.
I'll call it now.
What's their background? Where were they?
Everywhere.
Oh, okay.
So you had I think the gentleman guy's name is Lane. He was with Mick Waite, mm-hmm. And there were four buddies from high school that started this. Dylan has worked at Terry Black's, La Barbecue, 2M, Truth.
Yeah. 2M is the one that I want to try. I know it's going to be – it's in San Antonio
a little bit further
outside of the downtown area.
Yeah, it's out WWI. I'm very good friends with both Sewell and Joe, and we opened on the same exact day.
Oh, wow.
So they opened in San Antonio the same day I opened in Houston. So we've been able to text message each other back and forth about, you know, all the crazy crap that happens owning a restaurant and dealing with customers and that kind of stuff. The inevitable crazy people you have to deal with. And, people just think you're a bad person for no reason.
Well, we see that on Twitter with the request that Chris Del Conte gets, and he's so nice about it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I would be flaming these people.
Yes.
I don't know how he does it.
I don't know either. He's a man of great patience and grace.
They might have that thing on autopilot. It might be a bot at this point because he does just handle it with great. Oh, we're, so we're working smooth on it. You are right. We need to figure out that
one too. Like sometimes there's some like you playful jokes in there too. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which like off the cuff jokes like that are pretty tough to do. One thing like OU has this pitmaster guy. I guess he used to be a WWE announcer. I don't know. I wasn't a WWE guy growing up. His barbecue sucks, and I would really like to host Red River Shootout Barbecue Edition.
Oh, what is his name?
I don't know. He's got like a million followers.
Something Ross or something, yeah.
Yep. So whenever he wants a rumble, I'm ready. And I will do a cookout on the fairgrounds. Cook-off on the fairgrounds.
You laid down the gauntlet. I know who my money's on. Grant, we appreciate it, man.
Absolutely. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too.